This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Welcome to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of low-budget cinema.
The sleep of reason gives birth to monsters.
Hi, my name's Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, post-apocalyptic wasteland, kung fu, and women in prison movies from the 1960s to today. Check us out at reallyawfulmovies.com, part of the Crypt TV family. Downtown Toronto headquarters. It is episode 77, Class of 1984.
Class of 1984, directed by Mark Lester, with a story by Tom Holland, the director of Fright Night and Child's Play.
Yes, this is part of a long line of teenage delinquent movies, mm-hmm. going back to Black Boar Jungle, To Sir with Love, Dangerous Minds, you name it. It's got teenagers running amok.
Substitute.
Yeah, lean on me.
But this is different because
this is really exploited.
This is sort of like a post. Exactly. Like we were talking about. Okay, well, what movie are we going to watch today? To then podcast, and we were debating this movie, that movie. I'm not going to say what because something won't be reserved for a future podcast. But I said, Chris, have you seen Class of 1984? And your response was,
No,
you had not. And I said, this will bring the goods, the exploitive goods. Was I right?
Yes, and it brought Michael J. Fox, too, which I did not expect and did not know, or else I would have been even more keen on seeing it, although we've talked about seeing this, and I'm glad I finally did.
Well, this was the acting debut of not Michael J. Fox, but Michael Fox, because that's what he was credited at the time. He was short.
Stout, yeah.
Pudgy.
Yeah.
Very young, very baby face, but...
He's the trumpet player in a band.
Yep.
Made cracking wise in the school band.
So this is basically, this Class of 1984, this is a sort of post-punk, high school, juvenile delinquent film, but this is not Degrassi Junior High.
No.
This may have been filmed in Toronto.
Yeah,
and we'll talk about that in a moment or
no
two.
No Drake in a wheelchair.
No Drake in a wheelchair. No, but we do have Michael J. Fox in the band. And a guy named Stixter playing really terrible drums.
Mm-hmm.
This is really like To Sir with Love Crossed with Death Wish. This is like...
Warriors in a high school.
Unbelievable. Basically, this movie came out in 1982. And at the beginning of the movie, there's a crawl. And it says, 280,000... incidents of school violence occur every year. And of course, we get this whole based on a true story, which it really isn't.
Mm-hmm.
However, it's amazing because this came out in 1982, but watching it in 2015, you almost would think this is based on a true story because this film was extremely...
prescient, yeah.
Prophetic and prescient. I was going to say depressingly so. Because when we look at this high school...
Well, yeah, I guess before metal detectors became de rigueur in every inner city school.
Yeah.
And
students packing weapons.
Yeah, packing switchblades and authorities turning a blind eye, just throwing their hands up, going, you know, what's I think one of the guys at the one of the security at the at the entrance said, "Oh, what's one more switchblade?
Exactly. There's a thousand here already. What's one more?"
Lucky they're not working at the airport.
But I mean, okay, so this is Lincoln High, and ostensibly this takes place in Chicago, Illinois. But this was filmed in
down the street from us,
right down the street. Yeah. I mean, this was filmed at Central Tech. Central Tech. We are broadcasting from our downtown Toronto locations at King and Bathurst.
Yep.
Central Tech is at Bloor and Bathurst. So if you want to Google map that, go ahead. It's not that far from here. It still stands.
Mm-hmm.
Central Tech is a pretty
rough and tumble school.
Yeah, I mean, it's a class of 1984. What I found amazing though is that in 1982, when they lensed this thing, they must have done it over the summer break or something. They graffitied the shit out of this school.
Yeah,
like. The school looked like a fucking war zone. In fact, Toronto looked like a war zone. I loved, though, they did with Toronto in this movie. One of the best examples of Toronto standing in for a U.S. city. I mean, it was just incredible. But, I mean, you know, they totally just, like, I mean, they're everywhere. In fact, I mean, like, the faculty parking lot, they graffiti it to say the faculty parking lot. I mean, just graffiti everywhere. I mean, you know, I was reading that when... you know, production was finished and school convened, they could not get the graffiti off. So for about a year or so, the students had to contend with all this, like, fuck you, and, you know, pee-pees and wee-wees and whatever, you know, like to quote Mr. Bookman in Seinfeld, you know, when he says, I dream of a day when a kid can take out a book from the public library without seeing pee-pees and wee-wees. And, you know. But, I mean, this Central Tech, I think, will forever be known as... the class of 1984 school. Mm-hmm. This film has attained cult status. I mean, in addition to it being the acting debut of Michael J. Fox, then known as Michael Fox, we have Roddy McDowall.
Yeah, Planet of the Apes.
Yep. We have Perry King, who is, you know, he's a protagonist of the film. He plays a new member of the faculty named Andrew Norris. And, you know, he did a bit of work in TV here and there. But what makes this film so fucking great right from the beginning is we have a theme song by Alice Cooper.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime we have Alice Cooper singing the theme song to a movie, it's a great movie, is my book. You know?
Yeah.
He's back, the man behind the mask.
Yeah.
And here we got...
Is he Dazed and Confused as well? Must have been.
Well, I mean, school's out. No more Mr. Nice.
Oh, no, and, okay, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, that was basically a song that was... You know,
which, apropos of nothing, you've been known to karaoke.
It's in my repertoire. It's one of my better numbers, yes, indeed. Although this one is not in many karaoke books, unfortunately, at the bars we go to. I'm the Future by Alice Cooper. Actually written by Lalo Schifrin.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, film composer Lalo Schifrin. But it's a great... Take a look at my... face, was it? I Am the Future. Really, really, really awesome. So give it a really good feel right from the get-go. So, yeah, I mean, we have this new faculty member. His name is Mr. Norris, Andrew Norris. He's reporting for his first day. He's a music teacher.
Yeah, he's from the hick state of Nebraska, coming to his first, I guess, big city gig. He's new to the... you know, new to the school, new to the system, and of course, he encounters, you know, the hoodlums and this the bedlam and the urban jungle that is in Lincoln Hut, and he's met with ineffectual administrators like the principal who doesn't believe him when goons interrupt his music class and sit in on it and start, you know, acting up and talking back to him.
Well, talking back to him is the least of his problems. I mean, they're doing a little bit more than just
menacing him.
Threatening him. I mean, yeah. There's a group of punks led by somebody by the name of Stegman. Stegman is a character. He looks like a cross between, he said, James Spader.
Michael Rapaport crossed with, like,
Sylvester Stallone with a little bit of Nicolas Cage and Valley Girl. I mean, you know, he's not the most threatening-looking guy.
No.
He's got sort of, like, you know, the nicely coiffed, you know, 80s, you know, bouffant. But at the same time, I mean, he's a fucking sadistic little motherfucker. He runs a narcotics ring in the school.
Yeah, he claims to run the school itself.
Mm-hmm. There's internecine, well, not internecine, but there is wars within the school between...
Yeah, race wars between different gangs. You know, there's a medicine man, a drug dealer with a headband, and his sort of, you know, group of, again, warrior-esque gang members, and they all fight in the CAF, and they're all segregated in the CAF.
They also have a big fight underneath the Gardner Expressway, famed highway here in Toronto.
Yes.
Featured prominently in the movie Crash, David Cronenberg, mm-hmm. where he says, I'm going to cut you, white meat. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, yeah. So, I
and
mean,
also featured in one of the, you know, Romero Dead movies. Mm-hmm. You know, the Gardner Expressway makes, you know, it's Day of the Dead, the latest Romero one, the one where they're driving around in the big truck, the shittiest of the Dead films.
That would be Survival. That would be the last
one. Oh, okay. I never saw that. Okay, the one prior to that. Yeah.
Diary of the Dead?
Okay, before that.
Land of the Dead?
Land of the Dead, okay. Yeah. So that was bloody awful.
I actually like Land of Survival. I did not like Diary. But anyway. So, okay. So we got the teacher. And, I mean, at least, you know, I mean, he's up against his students. He's up against administration.
Yeah, the administration. Yeah,
he's up against...
He's not exactly Dead Poet Society rallying the kids and inspiring them. Which is an interesting term, because that's what I thought would happen. He sort of does, but not really. So mm-hmm. he's just thrown in this situation where he's got to lead this, I guess, what, he's got four different grades of music school, and he has this gang of four thugs that interrupt his classes, menace him, and one of the thugs, for some reason, is a prodigy Glenn Gould pianist.
Well, it's a stegman. Yeah. It's the leader.
Yeah.
And, but at least on his first day on the job, he does make an ally. He makes a mm-hmm. friend, a sort of laissez-faire, okay, yeah, this school is whatever, you know. He was a guy, basically, you know, so yeah, everyone's packing something. He actually yeah. packs a pistol in his briefcase.
Yeah. This that's, is of a, course, yeah, Roddy
this
McDowell.
Is, Roddy McDowell, who plays Terry Corrigan. And a funny thing that happens is when he talks to the administration, the principal, he says, here at Lincoln High, teaching is something you do in spite of everything else. So obviously education is not top priority. So yeah, we talked about this gang, and I mean, this gang is comprised of about four or five stereotypical 80s punk toughs. You know, you got your big fat guy.
Yeah, he's like Curly from the Three Stooges.
Yep.
And they got your one guy is like from... Your typical 80s punk type guy. He's got a heroin addiction. I forget his name.
And then there was, of course, the token female member, and this was Patsy, and this was played by Lisa Langlois, who we've talked about in other podcasts mm-hmm. because she was in Happy Birthday to Me. She was in Deadly Eyes. She was in The Nest. Fucking hot.
Yeah.
You know, Canadian actress, but man, oh man, she can't act.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, the first day doesn't go very well. I mean, besides having his class invaded by these groups of punks, he also has, he walks out to see teachers suck, spray painted on the hood of his car.
Yeah.
Then he goes back.
Yeah, and misspelled as well, which has got to be especially disheartening. Mm-hmm. There are no double E's in teachers, but.
Yeah. And then he goes back to his home, and he's got a wife. Of course, he's got to be pregnant, right?
Yes.
So, I mean, this ultimately is a vigilante film, right?
Yeah.
So there's got to be, you know, a pregnant wife, right?
Of course.
So
and these thugs obviously take it upon themselves to go mano a mano with this guy, and they pile into a car, and at first they drive by and spray him in the face, and then
fake blood.
Yeah, and then things escalate, and they get a Molotov cocktail, yeah. And they pitch it at his window, and they torch his car.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
he has. It's impossible for him to get evidence of their actions, and so no, of course, nobody believes him. So mm-hmm. it's his word, the new guy, against these bunch of thugs.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because, I mean, one of his most promising students is Arthur, and that is the student played by Michael Fox, without the J. And Michael Fox, or Arthur, happens to be in the wrong place at the wrong time when his friend decides to purchase some narcotics
in
from
the
this
bathroom.
Gang.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then Mr. Norris comes in and...
He witnesses the
well, the aftermath. I mean, one of the friend of Arthur's has already snorted a whole bunch of cocaine or whatever the fuck it is.
Yeah.
And he walks in there and he goes, you know, everybody empty out your pockets. And Arthur says, I don't do this stuff. Neither does he. And that's a friend that's already snorted a whole shitload of cocaine.
Yes.
And he says, okay, you two guys go. But he refuses to narc on the gang because he's afraid of what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And you know, at this point, Mr. Norris wants to get these, you know, these no-goodniks, you know, he wants to, you know, get them either suspended or expelled or what have you. But unfortunately, the damage has been done to Arthur's friend, who took a little too much. He's having a bit of a bad trip, because all of a sudden,
he's atop a flagpole, reciting the Pledge of Allegiance. And the whole school, at this point, goes out to watch him salute, and he's at the top of this 40-foot-high flag, and he's high as a kite, and in front of everyone,
literally
he just comes.
And figuratively.
Yeah. And he comes just hurtling down, yeah. And just dies in front of everybody.
Yeah.
And they all gather around, and if it were today, everyone would tweet it and Instagram it and whatever, but
yep.
still.
Yep.
And they couldn't keep the masses back, and he's a casualty of the drug war at Lincoln.
And again, Mr. Norris is going to Arthur to say, you know, like, come on, just name names. And then we can get them. He's like, I'm not going to do it for fear of reprisal. But you know what? He might as well name names, because poor Michael Fox. I mean,
yeah, the teacher,
in the cafeteria.
Yeah, the goons spot a Chicago police officer talking to the Michael J. Fox character and just assume that he's what's the expression? Squealing like a.
Well, he's
something like a pigeon. I forget.
Coal mine?
Oh, I don't know. he's basically. He's ratting on them. They assume, even though he's doing no such thing, and he gets shanked in the lunchroom by a new would-be. An aspirant for this gang, whose initiation rite includes proving his mettle by stabbing the guy who witnessed them. So the guy shanks Michael J. Fox, ruptures his kidney, puts him in the hospital. Luckily, doesn't kill him.
Well, let's talk a little about Michael J. Fox, because, I mean, you were saying, that you could tell right off the bat, I mean, this being his film debut, I mean, the guy had...
There's a lot of charm.
Lot of charm, a lot of charisma. I mean, you could tell that this kid would become something, right? Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, there's certain people out there, certain actors, I think Tom Hanks is one, and I think Michael J. Fox is another, who you can't not like. You know what I mean? Even if you don't like...
Yeah, they're film choices in the case of Tom Hanks for me.
Yeah, but it just seems such nice people. You
that's true,
right?
Yeah.
And, I mean, of course, I mean, Michael J. Fox, I mean... And this is before the diagnosis of Parkinson's. I mean, everybody loved the guy. And then after diagnosis, I mean, it just became compounded. You can't not love the guy. I mean, there's a hilarious Curb Your Enthusiasm
episode.
Where basically, poor Larry David, you know, was living in the same building as Michael J. Fox and wanted to, it's like, this is Michael J. Fox. He's making my life a living hell. But no one believed him. But, I mean, even back then, you know, when I see Michael J. Fox getting shanked in the cafeteria, and I'm thinking Marty McFly, I'm thinking, you know, Alex P. Keaton, Family Ties, I'm thinking Teen Wolf, for fuck's sake, man. My heart bleeds for this little guy.
Yeah,
like, I love
him,
you know? So, I mean, that's heartbreaking. And, I mean, and the other thing, too, is, like, I mean, Roddy McDowall, I mean, his character, Mr. Corgan, I mean, he's pretty, like, he knows what he's up against. I mean, whereas Mr. Norris wants to somehow reach out to these kids, somehow get through to these kids, somehow make a difference.
He's already embittered and is checking out mentally and, you know.
Yeah, and he's, you know, he's basically, you know, like, this is fucking school, I know what the fuck is going on. Like, these kids are a bunch of fucking
hooligans.
But then something happens, and it pushes him over the edge. I mean, and this was something, again, like... I mean,
this was shocking to me, and this kind of movie that you would never see. For all the beatdowns in, like, a Lean on Me and all the violence, nothing touched... I guess they had sort of like a rotisserie.
Well, he's a biology teacher, right? So he had like a coterie of animals in his classroom, right?
There's like a rotisserie skinned cat and a hung cat. Jesus Christ, that is really disgusting and sinister.
And that put him over the edge. Before
as it would.
Because before you know it, I mean, he's pulling out a shotgun on his students and saying, you know, tell me what... What was it again? Do you remember?
And he was quizzing them on the likes of, you know, what an amphibian is,
exactly,
which is, it should have been like, this is grade school stuff. But again, these are remedial idiots, so they probably don't know anything. But yeah, he's at one point, he just whips out his gun and he's aiming it at the head, second in command of the goons, demanding he answer his remedial biology class question. So he's lost it, and he gets...
And then later on, he's
shuffled out of the building.
Yeah, and then later on, he's attempting to commit vehicular homicide in the streets of Young Street, being
Yeah, what we erroneously said in the last podcast, Yonge Street, we thought, because this is urban legend in Toronto, it's one of the longest streets in the world. It's not, wow. But this is the artery, this is the main...
I've been told this ever since I was like two.
And me too, yeah, that's why I thought, this is crazy. This is our equivalent... It bisects the city. It's our equivalent of 42nd Street, but unlike New York, which has been scrubbed clean by a combination of Giuliani and de Blasio, Yonge Street is still has strip clubs, still has, you know, gay, you know, leather shops. Mm-hmm. It still has, you know, weed shops and everything, but it's not like
in 1982, though. I mean, it's a lot more, yeah.
And it was a rite of passage for Toronto kids growing up to go down to the street and basically see the the rock and the punk bars and the poster shops, mm-hmm. and the punk clubs. And so that was in 10 years from now, this will be scrubbed clean and will be completely gentrified. So
yeah.
But it was interesting.
It's halfway there, but
it is,
unfortunately. But and speaking of punk clubs, I mean, there is a punk club in this movie where you have Hamilton's own The Clash. I mean, you know, the Clash of Hamilton, yeah. Teenage Head playing themselves.
Yeah.
So that was pretty fucking cool.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so Roddy McDowall went apeshit, and he's now, you know, about to
ape shit.
Yeah, Monkey was made out of him, and yeah. He basically is trying to commit vehicular homicide against Stegman, and then he, you know, he loses control of the vehicle, and it does this incredible flip and explodes in glorious fashion, and, what about Al Waxman?
Yeah, and very cult figure. Al Waxman was...
the King of Kensington himself?
Yeah, Kensington Market, sort of an immigrant neighborhood here, and it spawned a sort of ethnic, sort of Barney Miller-type show in the 70s called King of Kensington, and he was the eponymous character, and I forget what he did.
He was the Crown King. I've never watched it.
I've only seen it a couple times, but he plays the Chicago cop, in whom they thought the Michael J. Fox character confided. But, yeah, it was interesting to see Toronto in a really gritty version of Toronto, and then as the grimy part of the 70s and 80s, the way it used to be before it turned into Seattle.
And it's really interesting, too, because, I mean, Waxman plays this cop who... Perry King's character goes to try and, you know, do something about this and clean out about these hooligans. And, of course, you know, he's like, well, we can't do anything because, like, you know, the JD Act and everything, young offenders and so on and so forth. But then when Mr. Norris confronts Stegman in the bathroom, what a scene, man. Stegman basically beats the shit out of himself.
Himself. He pins it on Mr. Norris.
Yeah, he smashes his head in the window. He smashes his head in the sink. I mean, this is just to prove his psychotic credentials, right? And, you know, before you know, he's a bloody mess, and he takes his blood and he puts it on Norris, and all of a sudden Norris is facing a trial in 6 months, you know, for... So in other words, basically, they can't pin anything on the kids, but it's very easy to pin something on the teachers. And again, I mean, this is something that... Nowadays, I mean, it's...
Yeah, well, you're a teacher, not admittedly in high school, but you can't, in so much as put your arm around a kid to console them, because you'll be brought up on, you know, God knows what, accusations. Mm-hmm. So everything is just hands off, literally hands off, and maybe the inmates are running the asylum. Mm-hmm. Who knows? You can't get away with anything. Discipline has been completely eroded, and... Schools are basically a lot of schools are like this. Not so much in Toronto, it's a very safe place, but we have certain pockets where you still have the metal detectors.
Well, Central Tech, with this was Lens, is actually a pretty...
There was a knifing there, I'm not mistaken, on the first day of school this year.
There's more than a few lockdowns there, you know. I go by there every day on my commute, man. I mean, it's one of the rougher ones here in the city. So,
at this point, I guess, after we see... This hooligan trying to pin things on Norris. This is when it really turns into, sort of a vigilante film.
Yeah. Because before you know it, I mean, one thing that happened earlier in the film was some Patsy, this is the Lisa Langdale character, gets a hold of the teacher registry. Did I mention that?
And yeah.
So they know where he lives.
Yes.
And when he's at school, ready to conduct a music recital.
Yes.
Because, you know, he did get through to some kids, and he turned them
Yeah, he turned this podunk shitty band. It was like, you know, it sounded like a wheezing cat.
Yeah,
it turns them into the Boston fucking Pops Orchestra.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're performing the 1812 Overture, and they're going to play in
the river.
Yeah.
And it was like completely, like, you know.
Yeah, atonal crap.
Exactly.
And now they're going to play in front of the school assembly, and they're going to wow everyone. So he's become the fucking Leonard Bernstein, whom they reference in the movie.
Meanwhile,
but they know where he lives.
His pregnant wife is home.
Yeah, and they go over to her place and they rape her.
Well, and when you say they, yes, plural, like more than one rapes her. And not only do they rape her, but Patsy photographs him in the act, and then they kidnap her. So he has to abandon his post conducting this orchestra to go through the school and find these hooligans. And
A crowbar and hides in the hallway to ambush the gang.
Yep.
And it results in this incredible fight.
And we're getting, you know, here we have, you know, not really come out and play, but, like, you know, that sort of stuff. Like,
yeah,
you know,
Warriors-esque.
You know, where are you? And, I mean, some of the stuff that he does to these students, I mean, he basically burns one to a crisp.
Yeah, that was incredible.
Incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, you talk about rotisserie. I mean, rotisserie a student. There's a table saw that's put to great use.
Yeah.
Where one student gets his arm cut off by this table
saw.
Which we noticed was not whirring.
It was not whirring.
But the sound, there's a whirring sound.
I bought into it. I didn't care. Yeah.
Because, you know, his arm gets cut off, and then he just gets thrown onto it, and it just inhales him in the back. Yeah. And it's
I don't know. Maybe it's because, like, my dad is a cabinet maker, a carpenter. Something about table saws just freaked me out. Like, I've used band saws, you know, the one with the blade that goes up and down, and you stick, like, a piece of 2x4 through it, and then, you know, there's something about that that just freaks me out.
I can never get it to go straight, man. Like, when I was in shop class, I always went, like, kind of like a topsy-turvy zigzaggy thing.
How did we both end up in shop class? We're fairly academic, you know, we both went to university. I don't know how that happened. I made a guitar in shop class, of which I'm proud.
I carved out my name out of a block of wood.
well done.
Yeah.
Hey, growing up, we could have taken a different turn.
Yeah.
I'm glad we ended up where we did.
So,
anyway,
we digress. Obviously, this is going to come down to a mano a mano between Norris and Stegman, but I mean, without spoiling the ending, wow.
Incredible. Yeah. What That's a showstopper. Yeah. We won't give any more away.
In front of the assembled throngs, you know, they're, you know, watching the orchestration, because one of the students does step up in the absence of Norris and conducts.
Yeah, who needs, you know, one less, you know, or, you know, clarinet or whatever the hell she played. She just stepped up and started conducting. So.
But this, I mean, talk about a showstopper.
Mm-hmm.
This was a showstopper. One for the fucking ages, man.
Yeah, amazing.
Unbelievable. And so this brought the goods, man. Exploited. I mean, you had gratuitous boobs.
Yeah.
Right?
Tons of violence.
Tons of violence.
Tons of drug use, rape scenes, revenge.
Mm-hmm.
Just everything. It was just completely debased. I did not know what I was in store for. And on the debut of Michael Fox.
Soon to add the J in his moniker.
And soon to shed 30 pounds and add a J.
Become the superstar that he eventually became. Class of 1984 is great. I love it. It's fairly iconic in these parts. I mean, basically because of Central Tech and everything. But I mean, you know, it's certainly a cult film that's gone beyond Toronto, and it's.
I don't want to say I prefer it to Warriors, because I love Warriors, but they could have taken a page out of their book here and made that movie more exploitative, because it was a little bit tame. I don't know whether Walter Hill was pressured by the studio to make it more palatable to a younger audience, or they didn't want to, like, cause some sort of, you know, riots, and, well, which it inevitably did, but this thing pulled no punches, and in many ways I don't want to say I prefer it to Warriors, but in many ways, like, there's way more realistic for teen gangs and thuggery.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the Warriors is the Warriors. It's great. It's iconic. I mean, you can't beat the aesthetics of the Warriors.
Yeah,
I mean,
true.
You know, the baseball Furies and all the different fineries, the gangs and stuff.
The Orphans and stuff. Yeah,
yeah, but
this thing, I think it had it beat in many, many respects.
But for, you know, gritty realism, this one had it beat. So I'm going to give this one 4 stars.
Yeah, for sure. Really, likewise. It is so enjoyable. And it made me... wax nostalgic about how Toronto used to be, and we're hoping we can keep some of that grit.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, that was amazing to see some of the storied strip clubs, you know, the bulk of which have gone under. But there was... I went to school with a guy in university who was the doorman at the Brass Rail.
That's still there.
Yeah, that's still there. Yeah. It's been reduced from, I think, like 10 strip clubs to maybe one or two at this point.
Well, the Zanzibar, which was featured in this movie, is there, and that's, I think, the oldest establishment on Yonge Street.
I admit I went there on a mushroom trip.
I remember
enjoyed a rather zeftig woman, that's the word?
Zeftig,
spinning around a pole to Metallica, and her big boots, like, shaking the stage.
Wow.
It's indelibly etched in my memory.
My Zanzibar story was I went there when I was 17 years old after a concert in Maple Leaf Gardens. I believe it was the Black Rose. We were just so fucking high, man, still. And
I was there, but not so much there. Yeah, I passed out, but I didn't make it to the strip club.
And that was my first ever time in a strip club, and I'm 17 years old, and the guy's just like, come on in. And I remember watching this live sex show. Two women, you know, going at it to Closer by Nine Inch Nails. I'm going to fuck you like an animal, and holy crap, man.
Yeah, it was life-changing.
The Zanzibar.
Yeah.
I love you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And anyway, so, and we even noticed a subplace, you know, that we're nostalgic about. Like, god damn, why are they not anymore?
Yeah.
You know, like, these fucking subways are everywhere. Like,
yeah.
You know, this is a great... Oh.
Yeah, a Canadian chain got subsumed by Subway.
Yeah.
And, a global juggernaut. You can see it from, you know, from here to... fucking Jakarta, there's a subway in every continent, and it railroaded our poor subway chain.
It doesn't matter what sub you order, it will always
taste
the same.
You're
going to taste bread, lettuce, and whatever sauce you select. Yeah. It's ubiquitous, and it's completely, it's mediocrity.
Yeah,
you know, here's 10 bucks for mediocrity. That's Subway.
And I'm kind of glad about the terrible public relations scandal they got involved with Jared. You know, not obviously it was a terrible thing, but anything to, break into their market share and bring them down a little bit. Terrible fucking place.
Well, I was just saying, I guess we're never going to get Subway to sponsor this podcast.
No.
No. We don't want them to anyway.
No. You know? Fuck those guys.
Fuck
Jared, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Mm. Fuck Jared. Anyway, what did we learn?
This is one thing I learned, okay? Everyone has a breaking point, okay? For me, it's spiders. No, I'm just kidding. That's just for a Canadian. That's a trash of a hip lyric from another Canadian band. But anyway, everyone has a breaking point, and you have a teacher. You could bully the guy. You could verbally abuse him. You could knife him in the hand on the streets of Yonge Street. But the second that you mess with his pets, and I'm talking about Corgan, Roddy McDowell.
Yeah.
The second that you rotisserie one of his lab rats, that's the end of that, man.
Yeah.
He's gonna go fucking off the deep end.
I would agree. I'm no PETA apologist, but I would agree with that.
Yeah.
I learned that I think they, for the most part, didn't copyright clear any of the musical references in this film. As they had a guy with a Sticks shirt, mm-hmm. a gang member with a Clash shirt, Rolling Stones buttons. Just everything, every band that was, big at the time, they just... and you can be sure that the Clash would not want themselves associated with these neo-Nazi gang members. So this guy had a Clash jacket, everything. I learned more than that, too. I learned that this is a storied tradition from the 1950s to today. Juvenile delinquent movies sell. And at the time, this movie, I guess... it's a common theme that... parents are always thinking that their kids are getting away with murder and that schools are way too lax and laissez-faire. And this also coincided with the crack epidemic. This was an unsafe time for major American cities, and this really played upon those fears. And if I'm not mistaken, the Death Wish films were made around this time as well. So it's playing upon the fears of the streets are no longer safe and white flight, whatever you want to call it, from the downtown to the exurbs. And Yeah, it's pretty brilliant, because this could have been made today and would have had the same effect.
Yeah, I mean, with the except of more some school of the sartorial,
shooters. Yeah, you know, choices.
Except for the teacher, who basically looked pretty contemporary.
Yeah, that's true. He had a goatee and modern hairstyle, yeah. And everyone else had a bouffant. But
and the leader of the gang segment looked like he was going to bust out into like when you're
or rent or something. Yeah,
flash. But anyway, yeah. It doesn't matter because it's still awesome. And Lisa Langwan, those mini skirts,
mm-hmm. Incredible. Yeah.
But it's interesting because with the whole Death Wish, you know, I mean, that was, of course, New York City, you know, pre-Julianification. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, those days are gone, right? I mean, you know,
the crime rate is down all over the board.
You know, you can ride the subway in New York City, not a problem. You know, mm-hmm. You don't need to be Paul Kersey swinging a sock full of coins, right?
Yeah, Bernard Goetz, like, taking the law into his own hands. Yeah, everything is safe, safer.
But when it comes to the schools,
yeah,
things have not gone, so good. Not so good. Not so good. So yeah, the streets are safer. The public transport is safer, but the schools aren't safer.
No,
you know. And there's another thing in this movie too. I mean, where parents take the sides of their kids, no matter how awful their kids are.
Yeah,
you know, like
Stegman, this reprobate. His mom just leaps to his defense, mm-hmm. and you know, threatens Mr. Norris when he comes to try and have a, you know, rational discussion to sit down with her, which is absurd too, because he could potentially be charged and jailed for his, you know, allegations against him, and then he starts talking to her, which makes no sense at all. And she says, "I'm going to call the cops on you."
So his rationale ends up with him in the underground parking garage, hot wiring his Stegman's car,
crashing it,
about 8 times into the, you know, into the different walls and stuff. But what's interesting about that is that
I mean, with, you know, Norris going and trying to talk to the mother and say, is that, you know, when we look at these shootings nowadays, you know, whether it be a school shooting like Columbine or a shooting in like Aurora, the movie theater, whatever, and it's usually, you know, the parents always go,
my kid is such a good kid.
I mean, gangland things. Yeah. No, I mean, I just never saw it coming. I mean, not my kid. It couldn't be. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
The Boston Marathon Bombers.
Yeah, I mean, Michael Brown, anyone, or the rap sheet 10 miles long. It's always like, they're the best kid.
There you go. So
everyone liked them.
So when we look at Class of 1984, I mean, you know, it's pretty brilliant in the sense that, okay, on the one hand, I mean, you got this good exploitative movie, which is a heck of a lot of fun, entertaining, brings the goods, right? You got your blood, you got your boobs, you got your brutality, you got your Alice Cooper. On the other hand, it's almost like a cautionary tale back in 82, which has sort of come to pass.
Yeah, you don't know what's happening between the hours of 8:30 and 3:30 when you're not around to supervise your own kids.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, my God, you know, we were different by the time we got to school, like the shenanigans we got up to that our parents were not privy to. Yeah, do we want to divulge anything? But let's just say certain friends of ours had, you know, certain certain bongs that they had in the middle of their kitchen that certain people would frequent on their certain lunch hours only to return to class.
I'm playing the fifth now because I am a teacher. Yeah. And I mean, of my students may be listening to this podcast.
It's true, yeah. But, people, like, just the drugs alone is enough to make any parent just shudder in their, you know, shiver in their boots. What's the expression? I don't even know. Is that even an expression?
Shiver in their boots?
Yeah. Is that? It sounds like an expression, even though
why
isn't.
Why not, man?
Okay, sure. Why not? Yeah. It's what they don't
hold
know.
Hold on to your socks. Like
yeah,
in,
what you don't
City.
Know can hurt you, because the best kids you know are into stuff you don't want to know. let's put it that way.
And as Alice Cooper says in this film, take a look at myself. I am the future.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
This was the future, is the future.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So, Class of 1984, excellent film.
Yeah, for sure.
And for more.
Yeah, check out www.reallyawfulmovies.com for reviews, interviews, terrific movie giveaways. Check us out on Facebook and on Twitter, awful_movies, part of the Crypt TV family. We'll talk to you soon.
Take care.